Welcome to The Intuitive Home.
All right, so I'm here with Marshall Shore, correct?
Indeed, Marshall Shore, yes.
All right, I'm here with Marshall Shore, and he is known as the hip historian, and is kind of, at least to me, an icon in Phoenix. Phoenix downtown area.
You know, it's so funny because actually that word's come up a lot lately and I'm like, oh my gosh. Or yeah, it's kind of surprising. I'm like, oh, okay.
I mean, you've done it right. It's just the way I'm sure you like to dress and present yourself, but it's very unique and identifiable, which when you see someone out like that out, you remember them because
right, exactly.
You don't see it often. And then,
right.
You know, when you're also out doing, you know, a very unique thing is, you know, history.
Talking right.
About
really talking Phoenix about the modern history, not yeah. talking about old history, but yeah. new history.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's kind of unique in itself. So,
yeah. And definitely want to get into some of that. But to start off, just give us 5 words to describe yourself.
Oh my gosh, 5 words. Unique. Community. Information. Authentic.
Good words. Good words indeed.
Is that 5? I didn't count, so...
I didn't either.
Okay. That's okay. I'm worried about it.
But, you know, we'll let other people get mad about it. The main thing is just to get some things in the people's heads about an idea of who you are. And
right.
And for me to, you know, jump off on. Like, tell me more about, like, why did you pick the word community? Because I resonate a lot with that word. It's a lot what I'm trying to build with my company.
So. Yeah. I mean, so community for me is why everything I do. I mean, I was a librarian for almost 20 years between New York City and the Valley. And it was really, for me, that was all about community. I grew up in a town of 25 people.
Wow.
So very small.
A town of 25?
25. And so
how many were in high school with you, too?
No, they actually bused us to high school. So I think in my graduating class, there was like 350.
Okay.
But that was because they bused two high schools together, two junior highs together.
Right.
I mean, it was an ungodly amount of time on a bus to get there. So, but yeah, so for me, it's always been about community. I mean, I moved to New York and it was like, the fun thing of moving to New York City, there were more people on the floor of my apartment building than my entire town. But New York is a bunch of small communities. I mean, wound up meeting actually a cousin that I'd never met before. I'd heard his name. And it was just through some synchronicities that happened. And so doing what I'm doing now, it's all about connecting people to place. I mean, when I first got here, I was like, why am I here? What makes this place unique? And there were just some, and everyone's like, oh, you know, there's no history. And it's like, oh my gosh, everywhere you look, there's history. You've got to dig a little bit for it. And so that's the caveat is, unlike some other cities where it's like there's plaques everywhere, things like that, we don't really do that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have my way, that will change.
We're going to get some plaques going up. All right. How do I get my name on one?
Well, actually what I want to do is I want to do QR codes.
Oh yeah, why not? I mean,
because it's like you can do that. Because it's like, I mean, there are so many kind of monuments around the city that are not well maintained, and you can't even read them. It's like, why is this even here? It's just like touting, saying, "Look, there's history here, but you can't know it because we didn't update it, or we didn't take care of the sun bleaching."
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a QR code printed on a metal sign, boom, and if you need to update it, it's just an easy link to update, and there you go. So that's kind of my new kind of. Well, let's do this.
I think that's great. I think that's, I'm such a fan of QR codes, and I'm so glad that the tech companies, Apple and like Google, finally figured out to just make it so much easier for them to be usable.
Right.
Now they're a thing that's actually functional.
Right. I mean, years ago, I mean, it was really libraries and museums were using them, and it was like no one else was. And so they kind of died off, but then they had this resurgence. Once an iPhone, you could just take a photo. And it zipped you right there. Now, same thing with Android. It's like, okay, you know, here's an app. Boom, there it is.
Yep. And then you can use it in cool ways like that and really create a neat experience that can really tie your history together for your city, right?
Yeah.
Which is why we live wherever we live is because we largely based on the city. And if we like the city, the general.
Right. And there's so much. I mean, it's like, you know, I always am so amazed because Phoenix and Arizona was so many folks came here to get away from where they were looking for a new life. And they were so many of them were able to do things they couldn't have done elsewhere. Mm-hmm. It's like they just kind of jumped into it. And I don't know whether it was because they were in a new place and they were leaving kind of their old mores behind them, the able to come here and just do some really cool things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been pretty spectacular. So going back to history, what are some of the key architects that have helped build Phoenix?
Well, I mean, it's like when you look around, depending on what you're looking at, I mean, you have like Ralph Haver with Modern Phoenix. I mean, that's kind of one of the main architects that they're kind of really extolling. You have like Benny Gonzalez, who was Hispanic architect.
Oh.
Who did things like the Scottsdale Civic Plaza. He did some of the libraries. So some housing and things like that.
Okay.
Robert T. Evans was an early architect doing Adobe. So if you ever go to the Phoenician and you go in and there's kind of that really kind of really big, that two-story kind of odd looking thing that's really ominous when you drive in, it's on the left-hand side. That was, I'll blank on the name. It was an old resort. Jokaki Inn.
Oh, interesting name.
And that was his handiwork. He then went on to build an Adobe mansion off in Tempe that's still there. The city redid it a few years ago. So you can actually go tour a 1930s Adobe mansion now.
Oh, interesting.
That's right on the canal that in the 80s was kind of a squatters for artists. There was also a horror movie, Bikers vs. the Undead, that if you go on YouTube, you can find.
Interesting. Bikers versus the Undead.
Bikers versus the Undead. And so you can watch that and they're seen.
Now are these motorcyclists or are these bikers, like road bikers?
Motorcycles.
Okay.
So yeah. Biking wasn't as popular back then.
No, I don't think it was.
So now it would probably be bicyclers.
Yeah.
And the undead.
Swinging their, you know.
But yeah, I mean, it was like, I mean, really the Eisendrath House was kind of a hub of artists in the 80s. I've got friends that went to like a Meat Puppets concert on the back patio.
A what?
Meat Puppets, which was a band here in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
So it was quite influential.
Interesting. Interesting. So, yeah, hearing that history is so fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I mean, the music history alone, there's so much music history here.
Really?
Yeah.
Not what I would have expected.
So, I mean, Duane Eddy, the twang heard around the world. I mean, kind of that whole rockabilly sound started here in Phoenix.
No kidding. A lot comes out of Phoenix.
It does. And that's why I think it's like, and I think people were just, they were able to come here and be someone new try new things because they were suddenly in a new place and they weren't held by the same ties or bonds they were wherever they came from.
That's why I came here, more or less.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to start over. It's
right.
Something new. Getting out of Colorado and let's get into Phoenix and see what happens.
Right.
Here we are.
Indeed. Yeah. And that's the fun of it. And, you know, and we're not alone in that. People have been doing that for decades.
Which is interesting, too, because they're like just so fitting for the name, right? The, you know.
Well, the Phoenix, right.
Yeah. Rebirth out of the ashes of the Phoenix.
Yeah, and I mean that Daryl Dupa was kind of in that boat as well, the man who named Phoenix.
Oh.
He was actually buried at the Pioneer Cemetery down by the Capitol. And he got here and they saw the canals. And so he was like, oh, it's the birthing of another civilization out of a prior civilization.
Interesting.
And so it's so fitting. Huh. I mean, I've started using really the term terroir, which is a wine term, talking about how you have the exact same grapes growing in different soil, they'll taste different.
Mm.
And I'm like, you know, there's just something about the soil here or something, because it's like suddenly you able to strength you didn't know you had. And so lots of just different things.
Interesting. Interesting. What was the guy's name again who founded, who came up with the name?
Daryl Dupa.
Daryl Dupa.
Okay. Or Lord Dupa, depending on, I mean, there's various, was he Oxford educated? He probably did have a little bit of nobility, so he may have had an income. So that may be why he had the title Lord, whether it was designated or made up.
So was he from the UK?
He was.
Interesting. Huh. And he came over here. How much history do you know about him? I don't want to go too much into
I mean, a little bit. I mean, I haven't researched him heavily.
Sure.
I mean, give me about 30 minutes. I can tell you a lot more about it.
I believe you. Once this podcast's over, I'm probably going to forget you, but I would like to go learn more about this guy.
And the cemetery that he's buried in is pretty amazing as well.
Really? And you said it's right down.
Yeah. So it's down by the Capitol. It is like, the answer is like 15th Avenue and Jackson.
Huh.
So, or Jefferson.
All right. I'll have to go check that out too.
So
might be a good date night. Want to go look at a grave of a dead guy?
But it's really cool because
I know that's the thing. It's like kind of a cool thing, but it's also like kind of weird, but I like it.
The caveat is, so it's not a public accessible cemetery during the night.
Uh-huh.
And during COVID, I don't really know. I know they're doing they just started doing open houses last month, doing fully masked events. But like Jacob Waltz, who is the Lost Dutchman. So the Lost Dutchman is probably one of the most, one of the larger than life figures out of Arizona's past. And he was a cranky old prospector who out in the Super Shoe Mountains found someone's gold. Whether it was a vein of gold or someone's bag of gold is up for debate. But whenever he needed money, he would go get a little bit of gold, bring it back to town, and everything was good. On his deathbed, he supposedly told his nurse where the gold was, and you can find lots of books tell you exactly how to find it. No one has found it yet.
Huh.
So
there's some gold potentially sitting out, but maybe the nurse just went and got it all, right? Is that,
you know,
if you told the nurse,
who knows? I mean, people are still out there looking for it.
I bet they are.
So but he's buried at the Pioneer Cemetery as well.
Interesting. I didn't know the Lost Dutchman was a real person.
Yeah. Jacob Waltz.
Why'd they call him the Lost Dutchman? Was he Dutch?
I think he was actually, if I remember right, I think he's actually German.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I mean, Pennsylvania Dutch. I mean, they weren't Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my family was Pennsylvania Dutch, but it was Ireland and Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, cool. So from my understanding, and very fitting to you, you live in a historic home here in Phoenix.
I live in an old home. Old home for the Valley. I wouldn't say historic because it doesn't have any designation. It's a little 1956 ranch.
Okay.
It could go historic if the neighborhood applied and the city of Phoenix was willing to do it. I don't really see that happening in my neighborhood, and I'm okay with that. I mean, it's over by 19th Avenue and Camelback. It is the most diverse square mile in the city.
Really?
As of the 2010 census, it was 27 languages spoken in that square mile.
How many?
27.
27 different languages.
I'm hoping that went up with the new census.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the stats on it yet. I've done global walking food tours down 19th Avenue because you have Vietnamese, Salvadoran, Ethiopian, Bhutanese, more Vietnamese. I'm trying to think. Oh, and Middle Eastern. Within half a mile.
Really?
So we did a whole thing of starting at 19th Avenue and Camelback and walking down, hitting all these different restaurants and getting the chance to talk with the owner, having them talk a little bit about the community.
That's awesome. Wait, who's doing this with
you? It was me. So I was
working. Just as part of your.
Yeah. So I actually worked with IRC, uh-huh, International Rescue Committee. And so we actually did a walking tour. I think we had like 7 or 8 people.
Oh, cool.
That went walking. And so we'd worked it out. So we'd get a little bit of food at every restaurant and get a chance for the owner to talk about why they got into restaurants, kind of the community that they're serving.
Oh man, that's so cool. I'm pissed I missed that.
And so it'll happen again. Yeah, I mean, we had one plan, but you know, COVID.
Yeah, of course.
So it'll happen again.
Yeah. 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 And I just need to make sure that I have all the notifications turned on for your Facebook page, which is the Hip Historian.
So it's Marshall Shore Hip Historian.
Okay.
Also, I have a website, which is hiphistorian.com.
Okay.
As well, I'm trying to think. Email is hello@hiphistorian. And Instagram is Hip Historian.
Good. You know,
so
you can give them again at the end. I typically ask
nice
at the end,
and simple all the way through. Yep. So
keep you consistent.
Right.
I try to do my best, but
no worries.
It didn't work. Anyhow. Yeah. go follow him. And because I want, like, I love stuff like that. I love where you can, like, really bring the community together like that and go and really also help, you know, small businesses and small restaurants.
That was the thing. People kept saying, oh, you know, we should do a restaurant tour. And I was like, you know, we could talk about some really amazing restaurants. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, but no one's really talking about the ethnic food, the global cuisine that we have. I mean, the other day I just ran by a Burmese grocery store. I didn't have a chance to stop in, but I'm like, okay, I'm going to swing by that Burmese grocery store.
Burmese grocery store.
Have no idea what I'm going to find.
I am also very curious now. Let me know what happens.
I mean, I do most of my grocery shopping over on Camelback between 17th Avenue. You got the Vietnamese market there, and then 35th Avenue, there's a Vietnamese market there. And so that's pretty much where I do all my grocery shopping.
Really?
Yeah.
That's also very interesting.
So, I mean, I'll dash into Sprouts or some of the other places for odds and ends.
Kurt, of course.
But
most stuff comes from the Vietnamese stores. Yeah, those are things that are all around that I don't.
Yeah, and so actually was
right past my, you know.
I mean, I was talking to a friend who was Burmese, and I was like, okay. So I was waiting for him to actually take me to the grocery store. I'm like, okay, you know, this is taking too long, so I'm just going to go on my own and muddle my way through.
Yeah,
and be like, hey, what is this?
Get your own experience. Yeah.
But I mean,
buy some, like, things like, oh, that seems interesting. Ugh. Yeah, that's delicious.
I mean, like the Vietnamese place over by Milk Run, they're really good to me because I will pick up things that I have no idea what it is, and I'll walk up and they'll be like, not for you, because I'm a vegetarian. It's like, oh, it must be a pork product.
Right.
Because there's very little English on the label, so I have no idea what it is. I'm like, okay, I've not seen it before. It should wind up on a plate that I'm about to have.
Fascinating, fascinating. Okay, so, okay, anyhow, let's go back to your house.
Oh, my gosh, my house.
Yeah.
1956. Uh-huh. Pretty much, I mean, no famous architect. It was built by Womack. Womack basically built Arcadia.
Oh.
And so
I just know Womack as the bar down on 7th Street.
So it's an homage to the bar.
Yeah.
So Womack, they also had Chez Nous, which was also an homage. I mean, so the Womack is a homage to Chez Nous, which is no longer around, as well as the Womack family, which had the restaurant and were builders.
Mm. Hmm.
So
interesting.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the house 1956 still has, the only thing that's not original is the front, is the side doorknob, because that finally just blew up about a year ago. The refrigerator, and we do have a dishwasher and laundry. Everything else is original, right down to the doorknobs. The hinges will actually, oh, and we can get into that. There's some things that aren't original, and I'm still pissed.
You're pissed that they're not original. You're not pissed that they're annoying.
I'm pissed that, because so we have new plumbing.
Right.
I mean, 1956, cast iron finally gave up the ghost. Mm-hmm. And so had that redone. In the process of that, basically they moved my bedroom out into the driveway in a pod. I got a new bathroom out of it. I had to fight tooth and nail to make sure that my pink and black shower stayed pink and black.
Mm-hmm.
When they removed the floor in the bedroom, they also took out the molding and destroyed it.
Yep.
Even after I was like, don't, they still did.
I mean, your commitment to keeping this house.
Oh, very much
amazing.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the thing. It was like when we moved to Phoenix, the goal was to get a mid-50s ranch in as original condition as we could find and to keep it to about 64, 65.
Yeah.
So had to get new plumbing in the house. And so they dug holes. They found some way to do it. They didn't have to rip up the kitchen cabinets, because I'm like, you're not touching my cabinets. There has to be another way. And like, there sure is. I'm like, okay, well then that's what we're going to do. And, but they, when they redid, when they took everything out of the bedroom, they took out, when they demoed the wall for the shower, they also took out the toilet paper holder and got rid of the wooden spool. I was so pissed that I didn't, that the wooden spool had made it in the toilet paper for this many years and it took them to just throw it away.
That is crazy.
I was like, why didn't,
like, thinking of that, that thing has held so many pieces of toilet paper. I mean, so many toilet rolls.
Yes, exactly.
And it's just like, was going, and now it's.
And why did they see the need? Because I'd have to replace it. I mean, I'm not going to have no toilet paper in the bathroom. So I would need one of those again. So now I have a nice shiny chrome one.
They probably like dropped it in like cement or something, or like, he won't notice, and just, you know, like threw it away. Like, it'll be fine.
But they were, so they also took out the molding in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. There was molding, a baseboard around the floor. And when they came in to give an estimate, they were like, well, do you really need that? And I said, it was there. You removed it. It needs to go back.
Yeah.
And they were just kind of like, oh. I was like, did you look at the rest of the house? The rest of the house is on point for period. You're now fucking with that. Oh, can I say things like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, whoa.
There's no FCC.
Children don't listen.
There's no FCC regulation here.
So, yeah. I mean, so, and come to find out, it was mahogany and it was a custom cut. So actually my handyman had to wind up ordering like South American mahogany, which is a little bit different, and had to create then the little template. So that way it was cut the same way as all the rest of the molding.
That's so interesting. Like, it's just your dedication to wanting to keep the authenticity of this house is so admirable.
Well, we're just stewards.
Because you're you're also living kind of in a time machine, right?
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, completely. I mean, but that's the fun of it.
Yeah. What's that like? I mean, talk a little more about that. If you can.
The flip side is I don't know any other way. I mean, it's like we've been in the house 20 years. Uh-huh. I grew up in the house I grew up in was probably like a turn of the century farmhouse. I've never lived in a modern building or apartment. Everything has been, because I think even in New York, it would have been, again, it was like 1920s. It was probably the newest. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, that was the thing. It's like, okay, you know, if we're going to do this, we're going to move in a nice little mid-50s and keep it as much as we can.
Wow.
So, I mean, my kitchen is lots of buttercream yellow tile with the matching in the wall oven, the stovetop that fits in with the push buttons inset in the wall. And so like when we had the house rewired, of course, electrician's like, well, what happens when one of these push buttons goes out? And I was like, you know, it survived this long. Now that you said that, that's going to happen. And so I went on the hunt and actually I found a whole new buttercream yellow drop in with the push buttons, so that way if anything ever goes wrong, I've got a whole new set that's almost brand spanking new to just drop in.
Wow, good way to be proactive on that.
Well, and like the neighbors redid their kitchen, they had the pink kitchen. I'm so disappointed that
you wanted the pink ticket.
I mean, I would love a pink kitchen. Uh-huh. And so they got rid of their oven. So I went in the alley and took all the innards out of it.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So that way when my oven goes, if anything happens to it, I've got all new things to put into it.
Wow. Now, what's it like using some of these older devices? Like how...
They still work temperature wise. Yeah. I mean, I've got a gauge in there.
Sure.
So, because I'm sure I could adjust it, but I don't know how.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not going to learn how. Yeah. I'll just figure out. Uh-huh. I mean, I guess it's, you know, I mean, it's just one of the things, I love the scale of an older home. I mean, like when we first looked at this house, it had these like 80s overstuffed chairs that you could fit like four chairs in the living room and that was it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, now that that was all out, it was like, oh my gosh, look how big this house is. So we've got two couches, both close to air. I think one of them is probably mid to late 60s, mm-hmm. but it still kind of fits into that atomic age. And I have lots of stuff. And so like one shelving unit was like one wall in the living room is like 18 feet long, 8 foot high. Maybe probably higher than that. So it's probably like 9-10 foot. I don't know. And I was like, okay, all the shelving units I could find that I liked were really out. I'm like going, I could either get a new car or have shelving in the living room. And I'm like, okay, that's not a good option. And so I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to make my own shelving.
There you go. So I like it.
Took me about 2 years of planning. And so I went actually out to, this would have been about 15 years ago, kind of the aerospace kind of took a little bit of a slump in terms of companies making things for them. And so there actually was a machine shop out in Tempe that normally did aerospace machining. And I had them do these elongated hourglasses. And then I just had some architectural plywood that I had cut. And so designed it so it's like Morse code. So it's modular, but there's only a short board and a long board with holes drilled. So that way, and so it fits that shell, it fits that wall.
Interesting. I got to come take a look at this. This sounds
so, yeah. I mean, I love my house. I wanted something that fit in the house. Uh-huh. I didn't want to just go to IKEA and just get some Billy bookcases.
Right.
I was like, no, because that's not the look I'm going for.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what my company is really all about, is the custom build to like really fit your needs and what you like and
right.
what works for you. And I like that you did that. And because it makes the house feel more like you, like yours, and that fits to your needs and what.
Oh yeah,
you having to fit to whatever was pre-made, right?
Well, see, that's like the house. I mean, the house is 3-bedroom, 2-bath. I mean, we had to have 2 bathrooms. That was a no conversation.
So you each get your own bathroom? Is that why? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it makes life so much simpler.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it does. But how did you come to that decision? Like, that's an interesting decision.
Well, you know, I mean, luckily, I mean, Paul was like, well, actually, in New York, we had an apartment that had 1 bathroom. Mm-hmm. And he was like, if we get a house, it has to have 2 bathrooms. I'm like, okay. Well, we're like, our first apartment was actually the Phoenix Apartments over off of, like, just north of Osborne on 7th Street, little 1960 apartment building that they had like the commode, but then there was a door, then there was a closet that was part of the room as a room divider, and then you had the sinks. And that was a great setup. So that way you each could be in a different space doing stuff.
Getting ready.
But it was kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, we need that.
You need that.
Yeah.
Because why? Do you have a lot of extra stuff?
Not me. Actually, it's him. It's him. For whatever reason, I'm like, I'm not going to ask. If that's what you want, that's
what we'll make it happen.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So tell me more about, I'm a little curious about the, you say it's a 56 style ranch.
Yes.
Now, does that mean it's on like, you have a lot of land, like it's a ranch style, or is there
I guess by modern terms, I mean, we could easily fit the house again in the backyard. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, you should put it in a pool. I don't want a pool. I'm not going to maintain it. It would go green. We actually,
yeah, it seems like too much work for me personally.
You know, if I had kids, it might be a different story, yeah. but that's not going to happen.
Right.
And it was like, I don't want to go down that path. I mean, I've got plenty of friends who have pools. So if I want to go for a dip in the summer, I can go visit somebody.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So, I mean, right now it looks rather barren. At one point we had these big plans, but you know, things happen and didn't get it redone at that point. At some point we'll do the backyard.
Okay.
So the whole idea, the plans we had drawn up were like, Palm Springs meets Elvis 1957. So
cool. Well, it seems like you got it, you know, your space figured out, man.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, I mean, like, when we moved in, there's a little eat-in kitchen. There's a little breakfast area, and there was this hideous Chevy 70 chandelier. And I went to a yard sale down the street, and they were selling the original pull down lamp that would have been there. So I snagged that sucker and ran back and put it up, because I'd been looking for one. And none of them were just quite right. Mm-hmm. The tone of the wood was a different color and everything. And I was like, oh, it's so finding the exact same thing that would have been in there.
Bingo.
Score.
Lucked out on that one.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. So now you mentioned that you have a lot of stuff.
Yes.
So what, if anything, do you do to stay organized? If at all, I don't know. You might not be.
So I am a nonlinear thinker.
Okay.
So it's kind of, my organization is not everyone else's. Is that me or you?
I don't know. I think it's,
I should have turned it down. Oh, it is. Okay, let me turn this down because that's really annoying.
No worries. We all got phones and mine's been vibrating, so I'm sure that'll...
Okay, there we go. So, yeah. I mean, that's a reason for so much shelving. So my other half is currently teaching in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. When he left, I took it upon myself to turn the guest bedroom. I got rid of the bed that was too old and needed to go. Mm-hmm. It was after I hit it with a hammer, it started falling apart.
Probably about time.
It was about time to replace it. And so it is now a walk-in closet.
The whole room?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
That's one way to...
So I'm like, you know, don't need a guest bedroom. I'm like, there's only one of me in the house. It's like if somebody comes to visit, I have couches, or I can sleep on the couch and they can sleep in the bed, whatever. It all works.
Yeah.
So...
You know, unless you're running an Airbnb, like, couches are fine. People can...
Right.
You know, when you're traveling, whether or not you're in a bed or not, you're not sleeping well.
Right.
So, I like that. I like the ingenuity of that, of saying...
And one of the couches actually is a day bed. So I'm like, it actually is a little bit of a bed.
Boom, done.
So there you go. But since I've done that, no one's been staying. So hello, COVID.
Change the world for all of us. But hey, you got a good closet.
So I got that. And so in the process of redoing, so this is the first house we ever bought. Mm-hmm. So we were like, oh, you know. When we moved in, we're like, you know, let's wait before we paint to see how we use the space to see. So that way I could also do some research and finding out exactly what color would have been 1956. Mm-hmm. If there was any painting detail that should be added, it would give time for that. Well, you know, 20 years later, we were still sleeping in a pink bedroom that was there originally. And had some plaster work done in it. So there was white blotches all over the place. So part of redoing this plumbing was getting a new bedroom. And oh my gosh. So decided to do chinoiserie mod.
What?
So basically fake Chinese about 1957. 57 seems to be a key year coming up because it was kind of the transition in terms of style and things like that. So you walk into the bedroom and it really does feel like a different era.
Interesting. And a different era in a different country. Is that what you're saying? It's like,
it's fake Chinese.
It's
fake Chinese.
Oh, so it's like the American version of Chinese.
It's the American version of 1950s China.
That's fascinating.
And so like along one of the walls, want to do something really fun. I thought about an accent color, but then I found this great abstract Asian fabric. Actually, I found two dealers that had it because there wasn't enough to do a strip across the entire wall from one. But I was like, together, boom, combined. I think we literally had like inches left over. And so instead of drapes, it's like there's a sliding screen instead of window, instead of drapery.
Oh, cool.
That
sounds cool.
Yeah. So when you look at the wall, it looks like the whole piece of fabric just goes across. Uh-huh. Then it's a red bedroom, which is glorious.
Very intimate.
So at first I thought, well, you know, let's paint one wall. And then I was like, you know, either go whole hog or don't go.
Uh-huh.
So... And love it.
Cool, man. I like it. All right. What's a product under $100 that has made your life more enjoyable in your home?
I would say they're both electrical.
Okay.
In the main closet, when you walk in the house, there is a closet there. When we had the house rewired, we had like a refrigerator switch put in so that when you open the door, the light in the closet goes on.
Interesting.
When you shut the door, the light goes off.
Huh.
So that was pretty good. So that way you don't have to look for where it's a light switch. Open the door. There
the light's
is.
On.
The light's on.
See, I love experiences like that. That's what we're about creating, man.
And then... I think it's called a clock socket. So, so years ago in New York, found a 3D kind of one of those venticular 3D photos of Jesus, which I was like, I gotta have it.
Okay.
Then we had a fire in the apartment back in New York, and we were living in an Italian Catholic neighborhood. Jesus was faced on a table wrapped in a towel. Everything else was demolished except 3D Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so in the house, it was like, okay, we need 3D Jesus. And it's like, well, but there's a plug. Do you really want to see this garish plug sticking out of the wall? Mm-hmm. So our electrician was like, well, you know, there are these old things called clock sockets, and it would have been meant for schools, so that it's a recessed socket. So you put the plug in, but it, then you don't see it. Well, you, it's behind the clock, so you don't see it, but it doesn't make the clock stick out.
Right. I get what you're saying. Yep.
And so now 3D Jesus is above the doorway in the living room with light switches. So when you flip it on, he comes on.
And he doesn't look bad.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not at all. So it's just those little things.
Yeah. Oh, that makes such a difference. They make such a profound difference. These small little things, man.
Yeah.
That are huge. And I love when I get to solve those issues in my own home, where I'm like, it's just the small thing's been bothering me like crazy, and I find some little better solution. Like one of the things that's actually killing me right now, because I got rid of the it just got old and dirty, is I have a it's like, it's just a brush that has some suction cups that goes on the bottom of your sink, and you can take cups and you just like swish them on there.
Oh,
it's one of the best things I've ever had, and there's some adaptations I want to make to it, but it's killing my dish cleaning right now, and it's like driving me crazy. I just need to buy another one. Like $8. They're not even expensive. Just haven't got around to ordering a new one.
Right.
But the small impact that has on my life is just profound. And like small things like that.
It's just those little things.
Yeah. 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 No question. Okay. So what about, was there any product over $1,000 that has a similar effect?
Okay, in my house, trying to think if there's anything that we've paid over $1,000 for other than the shelving. I mean, I still have a pink and black shower, so that was, who knows how much that cost. I mean, and not even in terms of just, because the pink is also a specific pink, so it's not a Home Depot pink, which is probably more of an 80s to a 90s pink. And so wound up having to order from a company in California. Of course, they didn't have enough in stock, so it had to be made. But we did do like little niches in the shower. So it's like, instead of having to have one of those wire racks on the shower head, there's two little niches in the wall. So that way I can put my soap in one, my shampoo and stuff in the other. So that was pretty life-changing, because I hated the wire rack.
They just don't look good. There's just like, no. I'm thinking about building one for my shower right now, and I'm like, all right, what am I going to do? Because I don't want to just, those things don't look cool at all. And I'm like, how do I build one that will look good?
And yeah. And my handyman is like, I probably would never, I should not have suggested that we do this, because it was a pain in the ass to do.
I bet it was.
Because again, it's old tile. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it's everything's tile. So. Mm-hmm.
Got to like cut them down to size.
You got to cut them down to size.
What are they, like the smaller tiles too? Or are they?
Oh no, this is no. It's like the 4-inch.
Okay,
and then then there's black
atrocious to cut.
So yeah, but that probably would have been So I don't know. It probably would have been easier if it was like the little like 1/4-inch, like the more 60s stuff. Yeah. But no, it's the good old 50s stuff.
Absolutely, cool, man.
And then like the floors, every room has at least 3 colors of tile in it. So we went back to linoleum squares, VCT. And instead of just doing like in the 50s, it would have been 2 colors. We decided to throw an additional color in there. So every room is very different.
Hmm.
So the kitchen is teal, white, and black, I think, or yellow. The bedroom is red, just like the walls, black and green. I think it is a green. Yeah.
How does having such a colorful house maybe affect your mood or your experience in the home?
So the house had good energy from the get-go. And I think really kind of making it personal just kind of keeps that energy there. And so it just makes me happy to be there. I mean, it's like the floors are spectacular. I mean, in 20 years, there's still more flooring to do, you know, but got plenty of time to get there.
Yeah, there's no rush.
So no rush at all. But the fun thing is the bedroom is beautiful. The kitchen is amazing. We have the hallway and the bathrooms were done. And like that hallway is the good art hallway. And so we only hang good art in there.
Okay. Is there a bad art hallway?
There's a bad art. Well, actually, it started off as a bad art wall.
Okay.
But do you know how much bad art is out there?
Probably a tremendous amount.
There's a lot of bad art out there. And you know, if you suddenly put a lot of bad art together, it makes one good display.
So you're really buying art that's really not good. Like,
oh yeah, no, exactly. It's like I remember when you're getting a sand clown that's drawn with sand and zippers to outline everything. Oh yeah, it's hideous. Then there's like the crushed gravel art from the 50s and 60s that would have been like the kit you would have gotten and your mom would have made. And so you get enough of that together and it looks pretty good together.
You create your own piece of art by putting on that art together.
Well, I mean, I really view the house as an installation itself.
Right. Yep.
I mean, it's like recently did a chat with someone because and also have some things in the house that would probably be considered very un-PC to have in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But it fits the time period, fits the mood of the house, and tells the story. And it's not that I'm like, oh, isn't it cute? That's why it's there. No, it's part of the air and part of the story.
That's creating it's true to the...
Right. And so it's because of that story. And there, I have stuff that is... anti-black, anti-Gaysian, anti-Jew, anti-gay. So it's kind of like, you know, pretty much I don't discriminate, but it's being able to then go through the house and tell that story.
Yeah.
That at one point these things would have been acceptable to just have on display.
Yeah. And not only that, like someone would come over and be like, I love that. That is amazing. I got to get one.
Right. Look how it's cute, like, look how cute that is.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, it's not cute at all.
No, it's terrible. It's very,
right. I mean, it's terrible.
Not okay.
It's not cute, but it's part of that installation.
Yeah.
I mean, some things have been given to me by friends. And so it's like, that's now part of that story.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's fascinating.
I mean, I think really viewing the house as an installation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, when are you going to start doing home tours?
Oh, you know, actually pre-COVID, we did do a few home tours and it was always fun because, well, we did themed. We had little parties and we would do theme parties where we did, oh gosh, like Shanghai 1929 New Year's.
That's great.
So we had lots of jazz, Shanghai jazz playing. We did, it was an homage to the movie Nine. So kind of had that soundtrack, kind of that music playing in the background, trying to serve also food from the period, things like that. So we did that for a few years.
That's cool, man.
And half the fun is the research finding, well, what's the appropriate music? Okay. Then food-wise, there needs to be at least one food that you would find in a cookbook of that era.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So sometimes, again, equally as atrocious. It's like a Jello salad, a savory Jello salad.
Yummy,
indeed.
Oh man, I think that's the way to end it, man. On a Jello salad,
Jello salad. Oh,
jiggling away, my friend.
Although I did make one that was inedible, but I think the next one that I attempt is going to be a Bloody Mary Jello salad.
A Bloody Mary Jello salad.
Yeah. I mean, how could that be bad? I mean, you've got a little greenery in there already. You've got olives, you've got booze. So that's never a bad thing.
No.
So I was like, that's going to be my next adventure in the kitchen.
Let me know how it goes.
Yeah. You might even get a slice.
All right. I'll try it. I'll take it.
Exactly. How bad could it be? How bad could it be?
Probably pretty bad. Probably pretty bad. I don't like Bloody Marys normally.
So what don't you like about a Bloody Mary? I'm not a tomato fan.
Yeah.
But if you put enough spice in a Bloody Mary, you don't taste the tomato.
I just can't. I've tried. I don't get how it's a hangover cure. That just makes me puke.
Okay. See, I don't like raw tomatoes. Raw tomatoes just skeeve me out.
I'm not a huge fan. I'm not a huge fan either. I'm just saying, I guess I'm a tomato fan if it's in a, you know, like a salsa.
See, right.
Or I mean, when it's ketchup and it's just, you know, covered in sugar, basically, but.
but like sun-dried tomatoes, I like, because it's like you get rid of that nasty.
Oh, yeah.
That tomato snot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the taste and the texture, tomatoes would be great.
Yeah, they just, except for that, those, you know, the main thing that makes a tomato.
Right.
And maybe if it's actually a vegetable, not a fruit.
That's true. But it keeps getting used as a vegetable.
Yes, it does. Well, that's how we're going to end.
Very good.
But yeah, so one last time, the Marshall Shore, the hip historian.
Right. So Marshall Hip Historian. Mm-hmm. And you can follow me on Facebook. It is Marshall Shore Hip Historian. On Instagram, it is Hip Historian. I even have my own Twitch channel because I do a Thursday night happy hour.
Yeah, nice.
And so that's every Thursday at 7 o'clock. And we always have a guest on talking about some other piece of Arizona history. And so you can watch that on Facebook, YouTube. And so there's next week is my 50th or the 1 year anniversary.
Oh, I gotta get that.
And, you know, and with social media, I realized, this week is also my 12th anniversary of launching what became the Hip Historian.
Wow.
So
that's pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, okay, I was in libraries. I'm like, you know, It's time for something new. What does that look like? And I have no clue. I didn't want to look back in 20 years and be like, oh, you know, I wish I'd done that. I'm like, I'm just going to do it now.
And there you are, 12 years later.
Yeah.
Still doing it.
Right.
There's a lot to be said about that, you know?
Indeed.
Few people start, but even less people finish.
There are days where it's like, oh God. But it's like, you know, sure. But every day there's so many cool stories. And that's part of it. It's like, there's so many things. And it's like, I've got to get to them before it's like all links to that story go away.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So,
real quick, who's someone that, who do you have lined up coming on to the?
So we have lined up actually coming up as Phoenix College with Marty Manning because they're celebrating 100th year. We have an archaeologist out of Tucson coming on.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. I'm trying to get more and more across the state. I mean, we've had people from Northern Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean. So if anyone has any connection to anyone in Southern Arizona, would love to get more Southern Arizona stuff on because right now they're not returning my phone calls. I don't know if it's because they're not in the office and they're so who knows, but
they're doing
every place has good stories and that's the fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's all about telling the stories. And, you know, I loved hearing the story about your house and thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And we'll hopefully do it again.
Sounds like a plan.
All right.